Staging Sound, a podcast reflecting on theatre music, sound design, sonic practices and experiences. Welcome to yet another episode of Staging Sound. For those of you who follow the podcast, you will have noticed it's been a while. It seems like a gap year or something since we last recorded the book launch for our book Music and Sound in European Theatre. But maybe it was just that I waited for a good occasion and a good excuse to do another episode. And this is a very good excuse because I'm joined by not one, not two, but one, two, three, four, five, six people who are all theatre musicians, who are all experts in sound and music on theatrical stages, and they have things to tell us and things to talk about, and I'm really glad we're having this conversation. We're talking today because when this goes out, which will be a few days after we record this, there will be an open letter in many people's inboxes, which describes and bemoans the situation of theatre musicians and sound designers and composers, particularly in German-speaking theatres. And this open letter will address some of the injustices or, well, let's just say some of the things that are not okay at the moment in this particular scene. And I really wanted to take the opportunity to talk to some of the people who are working in this business in very different ways, to explain a bit about what this is about, what is the network that has formed over the past few years between theatre musicians in German-speaking theatres, what is that about, what are some of its aims and some of the directions it is taking. To do so, I am welcoming a number of people, and I thought it would be easier if you just say a few words about yourself, your name, maybe some of the places you work at or some of the specialties that make you unique in your world. And you will see already from these range of voices that it's quite a diverse and quite a wonderfully heterogeneous group. I'll start with Caroline, if I may.
Hi. Yes, so my name is Caroline. I'm currently working as a freelance musician and sound designer for stage productions, as well as in a steady position as a Tonmeister in a theater for kids and young people in Saxony. Generally, this takes place in medium-sized theaters like Klassische Stadttheater or smaller stages, but as well in recurring international theater productions like for Rimini Protocol and their production Remodix. I'm really bad at describing my musical style, since it is very much depending on the theater production itself. But I can say that I'm working at the intersection between sound design and music, with an emphasis on the audience perception and listening perspectives. And since I'm not really good at playing acoustical instruments as well, it's mostly pre-produced or as backing tracks for actors and actresses singing. Yeah, I use quite a lot of acoustic sounds, as well as synthesizer samplers, and from time to time I sneak in my own voice, because as a trained singer, I can't let it go.
Very good. Excellent. Yeah, we'll get to your backgrounds in a minute, because I think that's another interesting feature about the theatre musician scene in Germany, that the pathways to there are so different and so unique. Konstantin, do you want to say who you are?
Hey, I'm Konstantin Jun. I live in Berlin at the moment, and I work for theaters since like 7 years now as a musician and also sound designer. So I can also join like a little bit what Caroline just said. It's I'm very interested in this intersection of kind of like the possibilities to not only have songs or yeah, like music in a normal way, but also to do more like soundscape and world building kind of jobs there. This is kind of what I like about this, because of course I do music myself as well, but for theaters, I think this is a specialty or something I'm very interested in. And so I worked in Munich or Berlin and Frankfurt, also in smaller cities, Kassel, I don't know, like this is mostly also these city and state theaters. And I also had some free scene projects, a little bit less than the other ones, but yeah, this is mostly what I'm busy with these days.
Great, thank you. Niels, do you want to continue?
Yes. Hi, my name is Nils Ostendorf, and actually I studied jazz trumpet, so I'm a trained professional musician. And I work in theater as a composer and sound designer since 20 years. And have worked, sorry, it's a little bit noisy, but now everyone is leaving. But I've done a lot of productions at the Schaubühne in Berlin. That was kind of my start in the music theater world. I did lots of productions with Thomas Ostermeyer, and then started working also with other directors all over Germany, mainly Berlin, Hamburg, Munich. And also did a lot of productions abroad in Europe, in Scandinavia, France, Switzerland. As Caroline and Constantine said, I also see my job not being only composer and musician, but also sound designer and developing like an immersive theater experience together with the other artist members of the team. So yeah, I also particularly enjoy developing a whole sound world where everything kind of flows together. And yeah, that's also what I really like about theater.
Great. Thank you very much. Rainer, can we go on with you?
Yes, Rainer Süßmilch. I live now in the Wendland, so right in the middle, in between Hamburg, Hanover, and Berlin, in the middle of nowhere. And I started back in the 90s being an actor, but I always did a lot of music, and in every production I found myself having some kind of instrument, trumpet, for instance, Niels. Then at a certain point I felt it's not working like this, because I always end up as being a theater musician, but it's not set up from the beginning on. And so I kind of redefined myself and said, no, I'm not just an actor, but I'm a musician and an actor. I don't come from the sound engineer background, but what I'm mostly interested is in working musically with the actors, so that maybe in the end you will not know who's the musician and who's the actor. And as I'm an actor as well, did a lot of acting then, this is often not really obvious. And I really like being involved as an actor, playing live music as well. But sometimes I do recordings and other things. Or I work with other musicians, singers that appear in the performance. Then I do a lot of singing. I do brass instruments, but I do guitar, other things. I just had a nice production in the Theater der Jungen Welt in Leipzig. They had a new opening there, and we had a glass harp, so glasses where they were playing on. We had all kind of crazy instruments. Loop stations and things. So I'm more the kind of, I don't know, circus guy who takes everything and plays music on it.
Very nice. Yeah.
Maybe this is for. And I have a broad range. So I came now from the Theater der Jungen Welt. The next production I'm going to do now is Kammerspiele München, a big production there, musical or a revue with my colleague Philipp Hagen. So I really love the changes and the diversity of even non-publicly funded theaters.
Great. And I must see your show in Munich when it comes here. So I'm looking forward to that. Katrin, tell us a bit about yourself.
Yes, hello. My name is Katrin Schüler-Springorum, and I studied classical guitar and choir directing in Vienna Music Academy back far long time ago, and back then with my band there I had my first experiences as a theater musician. We had two shows, one in the smaller stage of Burgtheater and the other one at Volkstheater. So we were as a band live on stage. And later on, when I moved to Berlin in 2001, I was in a tour musical, so I was out as a musician live on stage. And then in the past years, I've been working at Berliner Volksbühne in the productions of Constanza Makras with her company Dorky Park. And when you work with Constanza, it's always kind of a mix. You have to be prepared for everything. So it's composition or producing backing tracks back here in my studio then for the live production, playing guitars. I was working with a choir as well, doing composition. So it's a kind of a mix-max. all around. And yeah, that's kind of what I'm doing. And I'm not only working as a theater musician, even if I really love it a lot, but I also do Hörspielmusik. I think there's not really a clear English translation.
Radio play is, I think, the most common one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Radio play, yeah. And music for TV documentaries.
Excellent. So a different media as well. Excellent. That's probably true for some of you, actually. We're focusing on theater here, but quite a few of you have film or television experience. Excellent.
Yes, and my mix is also, it's kind of like Carolina, it's a mix with acoustic music, acoustic guitars. I love to mix it with electronic music stuff, with sampling and sound design. So this is kind of my favorite area.
Thanks. Very good. Fiete, who are you?
Hi, I'm Fiete Wachholz. I studied jazz drums in different places. After that, I studied directing for stage, specifically for drama and for music theater. And while studying here in Munich, I started combining like music and theater and started creating a career from that. So nowadays it's like I'm mostly working for theater. It's like 4 productions a year. I like the mindset that comes when you study jazz, and that comes with that, like the improvisational part that is, I think, a huge part in rehearsing and theater. And that really matches what I like about the intellectual endeavors you go, you undergo in the theater production, and the musical endeavors. There's always something to discover, and I really like the mix. Like, it's not always about like being the most virtuous musician in the room, but it's like always about those transitions, combining ideas, creating music that try to create an idea, try to get that into music. That's, I think, for me, the most interesting part. Like, some of you guys already mentioned that. Like, I think theater music is so much making music for a room. And that's so much a special part that I think when you're not a live musician playing with a band in a club, that's a really special part about our job.
Thank you. And we also have Fabian. Fabian, do you want to say who you are?
Hi, sorry for being a bit late. My name is Fabian. I live in Berlin and I studied jazz guitar first and then composition in Berlin and in Lucerne. My practice is very much improvisation based. What I personally love most is actually interacting with bodies in a physical space that are maybe charged with the topic. I always call it Aufladen. This is what I really like about the work in theater as well, trying to really get into what wants to be told, what I'm interested in, what the team is interested in, and then getting into a phase where it's actually almost like working with dancers. So we kind of try to collect the material, the physical material. Usually we record it in the teams that I'm working with video. And I also had to really up my game to be able to record my improvisations in a way that they can be used later in the actual production. From my experience, that's something very magical, to kind of allow the moment where something is actually generated in the room, that I record the music that is happening in that moment as well, and then use that material later on in the piece, like really actually use the music that has been created during the rehearsal with everything that goes into it. Yeah, that's something I find very special, and that maybe combines my, you know, my experience as a jazz musician, as an improviser, with being a composer and also being in a space with people from other practices, and combine these practices together.
Thank you. Excellent. And I've just noticed that maybe we'll get a few new listeners with this particular episode, and they have no idea who I am. So I should probably say who I am as well. So my name is David Rösner, and I'm not really a theater musician. I have dabbled with it. I've sort of done very, very few bits and bobs over the years, but I would not. I don't earn my money by making theater music. I would not be able to make that claim. I'm an academic. I'm a professor here at the University of Munich in the theater department. and have been interested in theater music and how it works and how people practice it and what it does to the performance, and how it's created, etc., etc., and have published relatively widely on that. In particular, perhaps for those of the audience who read German, there was one book 5-6 years ago, Theatermusik, Analysen und Gespräche, which is basically some analysis by me, but mostly interviews. And some of you are in that book as well. It was just a range of interviews that kind of, again, tried to capture the variety and the breadth of experiences and backgrounds and styles and personalities that work in this business. Because I do think that the German theater scene is quite unique in that way. We have a unique theater system in that it is much more subsidized than in many other countries. It is much more decentralized in the sense that most cities have a small or even a big or even more than one big theater. So I think we have about 250 theaters in the country. So that's a whole different situation to begin with. And I think what has emerged over the last, I don't know how many decades, is a very different role of you theater musicians, that is much less just sort of someone who comes in at some point and delivers a few tracks or something and then leaves again, but someone who's very integral to the process, works very closely with the directing team, is often there from the start, is often there throughout the rehearsals, and as some of you have already described, often holds quite a number of roles, or as they would say in England, wears a lot of hats. You know, you wear the hats of obviously being musicians, you are sound engineers, you are composers, you do editing, you do the implementation of the sound in the space, which is very special. It's very rarely a sort of stereo playback. It's often quite an intricate set, which you all do together with the teams at the theaters. You sometimes write material, you sometimes work as co-dramaturgs, and very often as well as performers. So we've already heard of a few of you who are either on stage as musicians or even as characters or something in between, which is quite fascinating. So I'm just saying that for the benefit of international listeners who may not be as familiar with the German sort of style or aesthetics, which is quite different, I would say, for example, from UK or US directing styles and music making styles, where there is, for example, a much more clear divide between a composer and a sound designer. That's usually two roles, and most of you will do both in many ways, for example. Anyway, that's just a little bit of background, I think. And we've also heard, maybe let me just add that, and by all means interrupt me and go like, oh, you know, this is not quite accurate, that we've already heard that your backgrounds are very different as well. You've studied jazz, you've studied sound engineering, you've studied composition, different instruments. Some of you have been self-taught when it comes to the electronics and the recording and all those kind of things. There's a lot of DIY going on, and others are, I mean, I've spoken to theater musicians who don't read or write music, and others are very fluent with it and sort of express themselves in that way. Some of you come to a performance or to a production with some compositions already sketched out, and some of you, as Fabian has just said, improvise in the moment and then record and then work with that material. So it's very much on the fly. So there's really a range of practices, I guess. Do you want to add anything to that very sketchy description I've just tried to give about the many faces of theater music in German speaking theaters? Are there other uniquenesses that you want to point out, or other specialties?
I think the most interesting thing about that is, like, it's for most of us, it's not like just coming to rehearsal, being there, having a good time, and then the work is done. For most of us, I think that's the crazy part. It's like we do pre-production stuff, then have the rehearsal, then, like Fabian described, work with that material in between rehearsals, come back to rehearsals, present new stuff, improvise new stuff. This is not like you're sitting at home and doing your thing and then bringing, like, interject stuff in rehearsals and have a chill life at home. I think for most of us, and like for me, when I'm talking to colleagues, it's always a different space when you're talking to them, either if they are in the production at the moment or if they like have free time. Most colleagues I talk to, they have like working days from ranging from 12 to 16 hours. And I think most of our colleagues in theater are like directors, dramaturgs, and leading personnel in theater. They don't realize at some, like a lot of the time, how much work we have to do until there is a track running in a show. It takes so much work, and it's on so many levels until you have a finished piece of music.
Especially as theater is always so quick, you know, like in between our rehearsal phases there, we try out stuff and some stuff might not work. So you have to readjust your stuff. And if you're an actor, and you can maybe like you, there's a text being cut maybe, and you also have to rewire your brain or learn it again. But on the other hand, you are, I guess I would say, much quicker to react on some of these things. And if we are composing already, writing music, testing it out, then sometimes it doesn't work and we have to realize that, or we have to shorten it. You also, it's a different way. Sometimes I feel how to like really write a track or compose, because you make it more modular, I would say, or you at least already leave open that you have to react to some things on stage. This is also the fun part, but this makes it sometimes heavier, because then you go home and you, as Fita just said, you have to cut it again. You have to readjust. You want to have that specific one part in there. How can you cut it to that point so that there's like the climax still there or whatever? And which is, I always feel also, which is a bit of a bummer, is that music is so omnipresent and is like everywhere, and everyone has a playlist, and everyone is just saying, hey, I have a track. Great that you have a track, but I'm here to compose it. And of course, this music is already done and it's perfectly mastered and everything. And so sometimes I feel we, by the nature of it, we are a bit slower in that. And so we have to make these night shifts to get a track also sound. If it's a recorded one, if it's not live music, then maybe that's again a bit different. But if you want to record it and make it stand out or stand next to other tracks maybe in the piece, then it has to be also a nicely produced one, no? So I feel this is sometimes the challenge also, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, this is work you do at night, on the weekends, on Christmas.
Yeah, we're already getting into the territory of things that are difficult in your jobs and in your positions. But Fabian wanted to add something.
Yes, what I find very interesting, I wonder how you feel about this. What I notice in working in theater is that music time or dance time or real time works very differently from interaction times between actresses and actors. And I find that is like the challenge, because if I make like a show or tune or like, you know, this is okay because a second is a second and a bar is a bar. But as soon as it's about dialogue, somehow time works differently. So I realized that most of my work right now is to understand where I structure time with music and where my music comes into a moment that I try to avoid to structure with music. Because when I look at the stage, I want to see something happening right now. I want to experience people having experiences. And sometimes having like a track that works perfectly really goes against it, because people hear it two or three times and then they don't have an experience anymore. They run through a thing that they have organized themselves around something they heard before. So I would often even not use tracks that are perfect, or I would go absolutely against using a beat that everybody knows. I will try to actually use aleatoric means to have something like, I call it Ereignisdichte. So mm-hmm. have like a density of mm-hmm. events. And then I will actually try to adjust the density of events to whatever happens, but I don't want the events to be recurring, because I want the actors and the actresses to be as surprised as me, because I don't want to see something reproduced. I don't know if I'm making my point clear, but this is something that I find very, very hard when I work with actress and spoken word, and very different from dance or performance. Yeah.
And clearly, not to trivialize it, but clearly something very different from just bringing a Spotify list to the rehearsal space. You know, I think that requires so much experience and sensitivity and sort of a trained ear and gut instinct towards the show that you're doing. Katrin, yeah.
To my experience, the most well-working situations also in the end of a production happen when you, as a musician, you have the possibility to improvise with in my case, mostly dances. Even if you don't use the specific same part then later on, 6 weeks later, but in this process is the most interesting and most intense music and art on stage is going to happen. And I think my feeling is that people lose this idea about it because of saving money, saving rehearsal time, having not enough money for musicians at all. So I think this is a pity because you lose a lot of intensity on stage and good results.
So to get us a little bit to the actual trigger for this conversation, I'm hearing, first of all, descriptions of how your work is and how intricate and how much experience and background it requires, but also, you know, you've been mentioning long working hours, you've been mentioning sort of the invisibility of music. What you do is sometimes not really seen and appreciated. Now, this seems to have started to be a conversation with what has grown to be a network. So I think it started with an email list of, 20, 30 people. What's the latest count, Fiete? How many people are the network now? 100 and...
Oh, you have to ask Caroline, because Caroline, she's the master of the email list.
Excellent.
She knows everything.
So I think as of yesterday, we are like 129.
Excellent. So that is quite proper.
It's really interesting in this situation that it's very easy to think how many theaters are there in Germany and then to just calculate, okay, how many musicians must there be? But I had never thought already when we went up to 20-30, I was, wow, so many people do theater music. And so this is something which is really interesting. And I now, even in our discussion we have now here, I think it's really exciting because there's so many things where I think, oh yeah, it's exactly the same. And others where I think, no, it's completely different for me. And to really get to know people as if you've always been working on your own and suddenly you experience there's so many other that have a similar situation, and this is really exciting.
Yeah, I think that's the great thing, because I heard that from some of you that theater musicians tend to be a bit, you know, on their own and a bit not withdrawn, but you know what I mean. They're not necessarily the center of the first night party necessarily, and therefore, well, some are. I'm sorry, Fabian, I didn't want to. I'm just saying. Other theater professions have gathered around each other and have formed networks of different kinds in the past a bit earlier. I actually, in terms of numbers, I did a few years back when I wrote that book, I did sort of a head count. I took, I think, the 15 big theaters in Germany, which of course is already a bias, but anyway, some of the Staats, what they called Staatstheater, and just made a list of all the people who were listed under sound under music, and that came up to about 300-350 in total. So you know, maybe you've already covered a third, but I'm just saying that there's actually quite a few of you, and that's quite interesting. But so the network grew and became a place of sharing information, sharing good practice, actually also giving each other some tips of, you know, what are the things to look for in this theater, and what are your experiences there, how did that work, and sometimes even saying, oh, you know, do you know a good bass player near Hamburg or something like that? So typical networking stuff. But it has kind of grown into something a bit more serious and a bit more political, which is really to sort of start to list some of the grievances you have or some of the injustices you feel, and to really combine them in this open letter that I mentioned at the very beginning, which is going to go out today, which is going to be the drop of the podcast and also the launch of the letter. Who wants to tell us a little bit about that letter and what its main points are, what the main things are you want to draw attention to with this?
Could I start with just something, some prefacing, because I think, sure, something that really sparked also the the talk between theater musicians is that there's this practice of every time you go to a place, you're being asked by a director to join a production, and then you get to negotiate your fee, right? And there's like a lot of intransparency around this thing. So I think, well, we might have all different like sparks for this, but I remember that at Residenztheater in Munich, after a change of intendants, all of a sudden the fees dropped. And young colleagues agreed to certain fees because they didn't know better, which is completely understandable. But that is the big problem because it creates precedent, you know? And the idea is that the artistic, like the guest artists are being paid out of a certain, you know, amount of money. And the Geschäftsführer of a house gets to like distribute this money and does it, Geschäftsführerin, in a certain way, you know? And it's all down to your negotiation skills, your seniority, the team you're coming with, the whole budgeting for the production. And this is all very intransparent. And there's like an old hierarchy that we can maybe talk about or not, but there's an old hierarchy of how much money gets who in the creative leading team. And traditionally, the director, of course, gets most. Then it's stage. Most of the time, even costume are really struggling in theater. And then at some point, there's a musician and then videographer. I mean, we're in 2024, 5. Video is super important. Choreographers, guest dramaturgs, they're all really down in the food chain. And this seemed like unfathomable once we kind of started talking about. And so this network is also really encouragement for each of us to, when you start talking to a theater, check with your peers what is the experience that they had in the last years. Because you go into these discussions, and I remember, like, sometimes it's so awful how people talk to you. So, yeah, this is, for me, this has been like a big thing to just, you know, be strong and talk to your peers and make sure that we're all supporting each other in that, in these weird negotiations. And okay, I'm just going to say one more thing. And I think it's really important actually to go beyond theater, like just the musicians. We should all talk together because we should like really think differently about how a production is being like budgeted. This is for another day. But yeah.
I would like to add a little thing just to that, because before I was going for being a theater musician, I was working in the dramaturgy at Residenztheater, for example, for 2 seasons. And although I was not in the position to know all the budgets, but I still learned that some things are very flexible, or some things can be bent, you know, they, if you want this one person very badly and it's the star, then there is money, and the money is not there in another corner where it was before. So some things can be put from A to B. And so I learned that this is possible. And this is exactly what Fabian just said. When then there's a negotiation, some things are so intransparent and so different than the one gets these numbers, the one gets that info, and we are all alone in a way. That's part of why I guess this whole group and this organization now of theater musicians is so great, because now we talk and now we see what the one person got told and the other one and all that. So maybe now we can, sorry, just to add this little thing.
Yeah, I remember times when it was written in the contract that you're not allowed to talk about your what you earn. It's illegal, which I know by now, but it was the practice. But to tell the whole truth, I know musicians or other people working in the theater, they're not really interested to talk about their own money, because I don't really want to know everyone how much I get. So I think it's really time to be open about this. And we are all able, I think, to understand that someone who starts and does the second or third production and is maybe 25 years old will probably not earn as much as someone who does it for 20 years and has a family. So, but it's really necessary to talk about these things. And we just said it yesterday in our discussion that someone said that Geschäftsführer told him,
well, if I would pay you this, then you would earn as much as the costume design. So there is still this unwritten law, director, stage design, costume, and then all the rest. And normally the choreographers are the worst.
And just to pick, just to really emphasize that point, that seems that because that's a really interesting statement, because where's the harm in that? You know, where's the harm in the, in you as a composer earning as much as the costume designer? It's not, you can't compare those two jobs anyway. And there's also no measure by which this is done. It's not like how many hours have you spent or how much, you know, I don't know, how important is the costume or the sound in bringing in audiences? None of this can be measured in any sensible way. So it seems that there's really mainly a sort of institutional inertia, I would say, just that we've always done it that way. And while I think your business, particularly through the fact that now music can be and is also is all the time produced digitally much quicker and to much greater extent, so there's a ubiquitousness, there's a quickness, there is a sort of music is so important to so many directorial languages in the German speaking world, and yet the theater still operates under sort of rules from 1950 or something, when it was sort of three piano pieces in between acts or something. I'm of course being a bit facetious, but yeah, that seems to be really weird.
Yeah, but I think that's an important point for us negotiating our fees and our contracts when you talk about theater and how it works and how it historically works. It is always concentrated around actors speaking text, and everything else has to add to that, and everything else is like circled around that. And I think a lot of theaters still negotiate in that way, that it's actors first and then there is a stage because actors need to play with something and they don't want to be naked on stage, at least not nowadays anymore. Some do still like it.
There seems to be one topic. Famous Berlin actor who's naked all the time, but that's another story for another day. Yeah.
From that perspective, you kind of can understand where this comes from. So there's like a director who directs actors, and then there's a stage that actors need to perform their play, and then there is costumes. And for a lot of theaters still today, everything else after that is extra. It's like, and it's, and I think the great thing first for us and then for the art is like the understanding of what theater is today has so much changed because of like, I would call Netflixification and like videos being all around all the time, that there is so much more intertwined stuff from visuals, sound, action on stage. I think this is something most of my colleagues would support, is like there is an aesthetically concept that tries to incorporate all of this at like an equal eye level: sound, light, acting, text, storytelling, all of those parts. I think when I'm talking to a lot of my colleagues, they all see those coming together to create a complete experience. It's not just actors standing on the stage speaking a text. This is like a very, for me at least, a very old idea of how theater works. It works very differently today. And I think for the network that is working together at the moment, this is a mindset and a baseline that we want to get through to the theaters and to the leading teams there, and which is a baseline of our work, I think, most of the time. And that has to change, like the understanding of how many different art forms work together to create theater today is really different from 20, 30 years ago.
What you're saying also indicates that this is not just talking about money, although money is important, as we all know, but it's not the only or the only point you're making, but it's also about recognition and validation and sort of appreciation of what you're doing. And that's what you're saying, essentially, that we have a complex art form, parts of which are less understood or less appreciated or seem to be less indispensable than others. And that seems a crude understanding of theatre. And I was wondering if you can, maybe you could say a bit about what you would hope to change. I mean, one thing is for budgets to change and for some unwritten rules about this person always gets more than that person, which are very often sort of seem quite nonsensical or at least intransparent, as you've said a number of times. But what other things in terms of recognition, appreciation, would you hope, or perhaps even on a positive note, have you experienced and we're like, okay, well, this theater has done that and that seems to work, and why isn't that like that in more places? Yeah,
I think apart from money and recognition, for me it's about communication about music and sound. I always figured that people don't know how to talk to us or with us more about music and sound because they never had a vocabulary for it. And I find it kind of funny in one way because it's like, just talk to us. We are kind of used to translate it in our heads what it means in our own terms, but it's like we try it every day to do it. But I find it's like, together with the voices of the actors, we are quite literally the voices of the play. And it seems that this is just cut out, you know, it's just, we try to, that's kind of leading what Fiete said. So I think it's about communication and about, yeah, discussions around that. I had like one theater where I was invited to the matinee, and I was actually just able to say something what I thought when I was composing this or that. And you kind of could see that people got hooked on the ideas that I had in mind for the music that was playing. So it's not that it's not attractive for people to know about this. It's just that they're not used to it and not used to asking questions for that.
That's a really good point. And just to be clear, matinee is not a matinee performance in the run, but it's actually sort of the advertisement, the teaser, yes, as it were. Yes. So the theaters do two weeks before the first night, and they do a matinee where they talk around the piece and give you insight. But the same would be true, I guess, with sort of post-show talks or something, where very often it's the director, it's the dramaturg, and maybe an actor, and that's it, you know. But I've not seen theatre musicians, composers being included in those talks very often. It happens, but not all that often.
We had it once at Volksbühne with Constanza with the West, which is where the live music was pretty in front and was pretty visible and hearable. So I think that was the reason why she wanted us to have in this discussion.
Which is good, yeah, it's good too.
Yeah, but it's rare. In fact, it's rare.
That could change. So that's a very good point about communication. Fabian?
I think what's also not working right now is kind of how theaters actually showcase us as being part of a production. So I remember in 2014, I did a production with actually a band member of mine. I put them on stage and we recorded an album and we thought, wow, this is going to be so awesome. We can kind of do a cross promotion thing. It's going to be like, it's a value. We add value. We put our hearts into it. And frankly, nobody gave
a dime
anything about it. At the end, they kind of said, okay, we're going to sell it for €1 with the Programmheft.
No.
Which is like surreal. But this is, you know, slowly some people have to think about like a label that just opened up that's releasing music from theater plays. So it's musicians themselves that kind of push it forward. But I think that actually just the PR that theaters have, like, you know, it should focus on all the Gewerke and all the artists. And I think maybe by just, you know, raising awareness for what we're doing, I think this could be one of the outcomes that we kind of force them to talk more about all the different things. And I really don't want to make this only about musicians, because there's also others that don't appear. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Getting back to the letter, I think it's also like it has been quite a long process. I think some of us have been there from the beginning on, but it's like it has been like 1 year more or less that we are tried to formulate this letter, and it was a lot of back and forth, and a lot of people put in ideas. There were also fights about it, but it was also a really good exchange, I think, and really important to do this, like to act as a group together and really try to find like one common statement that speaks for all of us. And it was not actually at the end. I think, yeah, a lot of us had like the same issues, and it was just so good. I mean, as other people said now, that just like we are all being used to work alone as a kind of lonely warrior in our job. So sometimes we just don't know how it is for others. And I mean, I have three kids, and sometimes it really helps me to also talk to one who's doing the same job and has kids and has a director who asks you to be there 10 hours a day on a rehearsal, and then getting back and work for the next day, where it's just also sometimes okay to say, no, I'm not going to do it. My day stops at 7 at night, and that's it. And I'll be back tomorrow at your rehearsal at 10, which is also okay. I mean, it's also, I think, this job has a certain amount of exploitation and like, using human resources not always in the most healthiest way. And it's also okay to just agree on things, to say, okay, no, and I don't want a director call me after 8 at night and who call me on a Sunday and things like this, which is very unclear also in the theater business, because everything seems to be possible at any time and any hour. But yeah, at a certain point, I said, I don't know. I'm doing this job since 20 years, and I kind of want some normalized rules and also see it as a job and not only I have to give 120% that the director will call me for the next play. And it's not okay. No, that's my work I do, and I do it as good as I can. But it's not, I don't have to pass over my personal limit to do this job.
It helps to talk amongst yourselves, to have the courage to draw those lines and say, well, actually other people say no as well, or say, you know, I'm very happy to do this and that and the other, but this is where I draw a line. Mm. Yeah, Rainer, you had another point.
Yeah, because what you just said, Niels, what I now experienced is that there is, because of the network of the actors, the ensemble Netzwerk, of course it was necessary as well. But right now at the theaters, I experience a huge concentration on the rights of the actors.
You're hinting at a point that is really pertinent to the German theater system, that you have one system in which there's so many different contracts in play. Yeah. You know, some people are working in shifts, like the technical team, and then some people are employed by the theater, such as the actors, for like 1 or 2 or 3 years, and then some of you are brought in sort of on a fixed fee for a production, to deliver that production no matter what it takes, and there's very little protection in terms of working hours, etc., etc. So that's part of the systematic, so the systemic problem, I think, of theaters. With a little view at the time, I wanted to sort of go into a final round, if that's okay, and kind of do a bit of blue sky thinking. So in an ideal world, if this letter reaches its audience, finds open ears, finds sympathetic readers, what would some of the concrete things be that you'd like changing, that you would hope actually sort of result from writing this letter? What are some of the things that you're hoping will happen in the next few weeks, ideally?
Well, there's one thing I just wanted to add.
Sure.
And it has to do with your question, because lots of things are quite complex and very different and different from musician to musician, from theater to theater. But there's one thing, some things like this difference in paying. There are some things which are very obvious. And this is, for instance, that coming to prices, how do you call it, like
there's no category.
Awards. Yeah, oh yeah, you mean awards.
In
yeah.
awards, yeah, this is it, sorry. Mm-hmm. Awards, there's no category for theater music. Yeah. And this is a very simple thing. And I think it's really time
to introduce one.
This yeah. should change.
So at the Faust or at some of those award seasons, yeah, it simply it doesn't exist. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. More ideas, Konstantin.
I would say that for me, it comes down to a lot of the theaters should lose their love for hierarchies in a way, because it has to do a lot with they are still so keen on making these structures and different boxes and all of that. And this is something we find in our negotiations. I also wanted to add this before, because like this sick logic of why the costumes are also traditionally earning less than the stage was also mostly because of sexist reasons, because it was mostly women doing that job. So also this old logic is going back, and it also, this is still the hierarchy that we are facing. And I don't understand why theater, who is so happy with picking the right pieces and plays to put on stage that are super left-wing, and we are all like, of course we're all left-wing, are not getting it done behind the curtains, you know? And this for me has a lot to do with this still obsessive love for hierarchies. And I would love to see that fall and change theater for the better. Yeah.
There's one thing about the hierarchy, what I would love that should be changed. This is that, because I always, the directors I work with, they know that I'm always working together with them really closely. And it's not that I, after the rehearsal, I go to them and say, well, in this moment, it should be like this and this, but I intervene in the rehearsal, and they know it and they like it and they know that they profit from it. So I'm really on stage often quite, yeah, it's more co-directing than something else. And I think we will probably get to the point that we don't negotiate money for the different people, but that you have for a production, and that within the production you decide, okay, this is a play, there's so much music, so the musician should get, and it's only two people, two actors, and they have two costumes, so maybe it's for the costume designer that it's not this high, and that we should find ways there too.
Yeah, I think also a common frustration for us all has been like the form that theater critics speak about our work or who don't mention it at all, which has been the case like since I started this job. It's always the same frustration that like the 2 days after the premiere you buy your newspaper. Now you do it online, but you work like 16 hours a day for a month, and you're exhausted and you're so proud what you did, and then it's just your name doesn't pop up. And it's just very disappointing because, I don't know, this is also a very specific German problem, I have the feeling, because I did productions in Paris or even like touring the US or also in Britain. It's like part of the critique that there's really a couple of sentences of every artistic part of the show. And also I have the feeling, for example, in France, that people were really much more educated to talk about the music I did and could like really recognize what it is and describe it. And in Germany, sometimes it's really a disaster, which is also probably, yeah, the background of education of theater critics or like the schools, they take that it's only about dramaturgy and text, that all these other art forms, they have hard times to talk about it. So they prefer not to mention it at all, which is for us a problem of visibility. And also at the end, it comes back to negotiating, like the director of the theater will say, but yeah, why should I pay you much more? Because anyway, no one cares. No one is aware of you are doing. Because yeah, so it's kind of also a backlash to us when the theater critics don't speak about our work.
Yeah, I would like get to that too. Like, I think the biggest point for me is like communication. Like Caroline mentioned earlier, what we have to achieve, like what we all want, is the art. We are all so proud to be able to make a living out of making art. This is amazing, and this is a very German or German-speaking specificity in our world. I know that like in many other different countries, it's not possible for musicians to live just off their theater work. We all want to make the best art possible. And like, I think the harshest thing you can do to an artist is like not talk about their art and not to recognize that someone worked, like Neil said, their asses off to create art. And yes, of course, our work needs to be paid. And yes, this has to change and get better. But on the other hand, there are so many people, when I tell them, what do you do? I'm a theater musician. Oh, what does that mean? and then you start to explain, and then they're like, oh, but it's like 5 to 10 different jobs. No one knows. This is all about communication, and it's about communication in the theater, outside the theater, from and in the media, like on all levels. When it comes down, I think what we need to talk about is communication and how we get more representation of our art form on more levels.
Yeah, but there I think it's, I come back to one of my favorite points there, is that it's one thing to do this letter and it's one thing to complain about things that should be changed. But at the same time, it's very important that we find other ways of communicating what we're doing. And so I'm just about now to start a thing like that. We have regular soirees with other musicians, so that you host an evening and you say, okay, I invite other musicians working on the theater now. What's the production you're working on? What's your background? And then let's play some music and let's do some jamming. And this is the good thing we have with the music, is we can always make really entertaining evenings, even if it's a very specific or really, how do you say, not mainstream music, but so we can talk, we can jam, we can, and this is something to be, to become much more self-assured with this and find a space where we can present ourselves. And I'm really looking forward to do these things and to meet you all in these occasions.
I think it's a great idea, and it gets you out of that passive role of hoping that someone else will change, and hoping someone will come to you and say, oh, amazing job, but you empower yourself to say, no, we're going out there and we're telling them about it. And it's one of the vehicles. And I think it's going to be a cluster of different things that you need to do. It's not one measure, but a lot of little steps. But I think that you've started with this letter, you've started building a network, and that's going in the right direction. Fabian.
Yeah, so when I look into the future from this letter towards maybe a decade, one thing that will happen by ending these kind of hierarchical ideas is also this overcome idea that theater is a machine to tell a one person, mostly male person's perspective to 600 people that sit there and say nothing. And we're all in line to tell this story. And I mean, this is already kind of, even in the theater, which is kind of backwards in some ways, this is kind of, we're getting over this idea. There are so many other narrations and ideas of narratives like looming and emerging. And I think like going forward and claiming that place that we are part of the voices of a chorus, you know, I think we're starting to balance out like the voices, and it only works when we're getting louder. And I think this letter is the start, and I actually hope that it's really gonna get the choreographers on board. And I mean, we're not even like, we're only talking about spoken theater, but like dancers, like their lives, like, it's crazy. And I think we have so many voices, and I think it's over that there's one voice and one, and sorry, we're always telling the same stories. It's insane. Like, of course it's evolving, but I think this is a very important step to, you know, create momentum, or maybe also embrace the momentum that actors already started. Yeah. To kind of end this kind of really hierarchical storytelling idea as well. I think like the stages can have much more to offer.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I think we should wrap up and give people time to read the letter. I'm definitely putting links to all of you in the show notes and a link to the letter in the show notes so people can follow up this debate. And then hopefully the newspapers and the culture sections of the radio stations, etc., will be full of this. No, I'm on a serious note. I really hope for a big echo and that you are getting heard. I think that's the first big step, and then maybe even things will change. Thank you so much for taking the time. You have all busy schedules. You're in between rehearsals and producing the next music for the next piece. Thank you for spending time with me and good luck. And really, I'm really fascinated and keen to see what's happening now. So let's hope for a lot of movement. Thanks. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, David.
Yeah, thank you for inviting us. Goodbye. Bye-bye.